Declaration of Independence.
Oh, yeah.
In 1776.
Right on.
The Continental Congress said that we were free. Said we had the right of life and liberty. And the pursuit of happiness.
I'm not sure that ever made the top 40, but it probably should have. You're tuned in to Rosie on the House, where we have Dr. Dean, Assistant Professor of History at Grand Canyon University, here to give you finger-pointing facts of the Declaration of Independence you can take to your barbecue this afternoon. You can be the Declaration of Independence nerd, pointing at people and asking them why they don't know these things. And so the Declaration of Independence is what we're celebrating today, the 4th of July. It's the date that the Second Continental Congress adopted the final full and formal resolution. It was not referred to as the Declaration of Independence when it was signed. I believe it was just submitting a resolution for a yay or nay vote, right?
Exactly.
Well, my big question is, what did the First Continental Congress do? This was the second, what happened at the first?
Well, the First Continental Congress was convened to talk about some of the recent legislation that Parliament had passed that governed the colonies. Enforcement of the Navigation Acts, the Greenville and the Stamp Acts, and the Townsend Acts were all laws that were being kind of oppressive on trade and commerce in America. The Stamp Act being primarily one of the most oppressive, because it required a stamp by a government official every time you wanted to do a transaction that required a piece of paper. So every contract, every deed, every newspaper, every letter that you mailed, everything had to have this stamp. Now, you could think that, well, okay, it's a pain going and getting stamps, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's about the government knowing what you're doing. If you have to go into a government official and get a stamp, that means they're going to look over this contract or this deed or this bill of sale or this newspaper, whatnot. And if they can look that over, then they know exactly what you're doing. And so people were really felt this was an overstep of the government. So the First Continental Congress was convened to talk about and to write a letter to Congress, to Parliament, and say, hey, you know, we think these things are kind of oppressive. We want some changes made to these things. It also was in case some things go kind of wrong here. Maybe some of the states, the colonies should get their houses in order, because they didn't really think of themselves too much as a group yet of 13 colonies. And in fact, only 12 attended the First Continental Congress.
Who was the holdout?
I believe it was Rhode Island.
Okay.
And the idea was that they would come together and talk about these things. And oh, by the way, if we have some trouble with England, we might need to, you know, make sure that you have a way of raising troops or defending a militia, kind of get a militia growing. Or you might need to make sure you have a constitution in your states, because like Virginia, Massachusetts, and some of them have already established those kind of government kind of rules. But some of the other colonies were a little bit more loosey about how they were doing things. And so the First Continental Congress was kind of a planning. And we're going to write this letter and see what happens with it. Well, nothing really happened to it. So when they come together for the Second Continental Congress, it's like, okay, first, if you get your houses in order. And second of all, we're going to go ahead forward this. And so they created a small committee of five to draft up the thing. Most people think that Thomas Jefferson is the writer. He was just one of four on that group. And the committee brings it to the whole group on July 2nd, and they debate it for a while, and then they adopt the final draft of it on July 4th.
This is in Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
right? And the English have their fleet in New York Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already here.
Right. In fact, the hostilities were by the time we get to the Second Continental Congress, hostilities had already broken out between the colonists and Mother England already.
The shot heard round the world at Lexington.
Lexington and Concord had already taken place. The Boston Massacre had taken place. So
Battle of Bunker Hill.
And the colonists were feeling that, you know, what's going on here? It's time for us to do something. And that all fueled that revolutionary kind of spark, that moment. Maybe it's time for us to go a different way.
All right. So the Second Continental Congress comes together. After reviewing that Articles of Confederation from the First Continental Congress, I'm still wondering why the king doesn't give an inch and say, okay, I'll keep you. He has to, in his mind, somehow say, okay, you're going to go from a colony to a state. And why, they've already got like this legislative body that can represent the yes or no of the majority, a significant portion of the population. Why don't you just give them the representation? I mean,
Well, I think it goes back to kind of how England set up the administration of the colonies. Remember that they're talking about a system of what they call mercantilism. And in this idea, the colonies served as a place where raw materials were generated and sent back to the mother country. And then it was a market for the mother country to send their goods and products. And so under that system, there were a series of navigation acts, they called them, that were used to govern trade and commerce so the government could collect taxes. Well, that's a revenue stream that if they turned the colonies into, say, provinces or shires or whatnot that England was already administering, the tax bases would have changed because you're not conducting trade and commerce, and that would have been a loss of revenue. So the crown needs that money.
But hadn't the colonists already kind of shown support for the king through the Seven-Year War and the French-Indian War? I mean, we kind of lended support to him to win those wars, didn't we?
Yes, we provided militia. We provided
couldn't
sources
say
and
thank
things.
You? I mean,
well, it was expensive to defeat France in 1763. And so the king, the parliament, realized that, okay, we've got to pay for this big, expensive 7 years' war, which took place largely here in North America and kicked France out and gave most of North America to Britain. But we have to pay for that war now, and we've got all these troops left over, and we don't want to really bring them back to England because that would have created a mass unemployment over there. So let's leave them here.
And the same issues.
The same issues.
Wow.
So we leave them here, and we got to feed them. We got to put clothes on them. We got to have them do stuff, pay them a wage. And so, okay, the colonists need to pick up that tab. And on top of that, we've now given you this big, huge frontier, the Appalachian Mountains and all the west of that. And so that's a big area to protect you from. And so the king's saying, we need you to help us out with some money with this. And during the 7 Years' War, the colonists had been pretty loosey about paying their customs and their taxes and things. So part of these acts were about clamping down on them.
Very good.
So who is England borrowing money from then? If they're not, they're the world power at the time. They pay for this war. Who's writing? Was China writing checks back then too?
Well, England's doing pretty well in this colony system because they are generating raw materials here and selling things here. So they're making some money. And if they have to borrow money, well, they are Habsburgs. And so they have Austrians and whatnot that they could get money from.
Very good. Okay. 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence. We've all read tear-jerking stories about what happened to each of them after they signed and through the course of the war. We're going to get back and get to the bottom of that right here at Rosie on the House with Dr. David Dean of the Grand Canyon University.